first thing you can tell me is the crafts that you do.
Quilting, soft sculpture stitching, dolls, marionettes and puppets, dressmaking, and quilting. Is that all I do?
Beading?
Nope, I don't do beading. Just on the dolls, what's on the dolls. And I don't, it's not really, I wouldn't really call it beading. No. And dolls, I guess. I make all my own clothes. And storytelling. Those marionettes, there's a purpose for those marionettes. When I started to work on marionettes and puppets, the whole idea was for language teaching. I have used these two plus a bear one, a bear marionette animal, because this is my clan, bear. You'll also notice on the little girl's necklace she wears around her neck, it's got a picture of a bear on it. I've done two videotapes telling little stories in Oneida with these puppets, and those two videotapes are at the school now. I have a copy, and there's a copy at the university. So it's more like language development work. I call it language development work. My dolls that I make, there's some of the marionettes that are the hand puppets there, and those are the marionettes there. And they're all, you can tell by their color, I don't have, all my puppets are Indian oriented. And my puppets were not supposed to speak any other language but Oneida. And hopefully someday I will be given space in the school to do exactly what you were talking about a while ago. They let the kids make them themselves, provide the stories or make up a dialogue to suit them, and let the kids do these plays. Because of my arthritis, the marionettes are hard to...
Oh, yes.
And even with those, your hands have to be like this, so straight, or if it falls over, it looks like poor little thing is leaning and tired out. I also make, I'm also now in the process of making Indian dresses for little girls. Because of being on the Sesquicentennial Committee, I asked them to think about, to consider pushing the idea of our traditional dress, especially for the committee, in their meetings or special functions, public functions. And there's going to be a lot of them coming up because we only got less than 3 years to prepare for the whole year celebration. So, and the star blanket, it's very traditional Indian, whether it's adopted from white people as or other Native people, I'm not quite sure. But right now, I know a star blanket is very important to Indian people. I know in Wisconsin, every Indian has a star blanket. And I've always wanted one, so there, I'm gonna have one. The teachings I got from my mother, it was very traditional. In many ways, I remember a lot of that teaching, and sometimes it gets me into more trouble than not, because I disagree with everything else. In my way of thinking, I disagree with so many things that are going on right now. Because I think, in order to rid our children of our double identity crisis, we need to have them be proud of who they are to begin with. And the more pride they can take in who they are, then they may only have one crisis then, one identity crisis to lick, which everybody has.
What are the parts of the culture that you think are the most important?
Language.
Giving the children the language. Language. The most?
Well, it's kind of hard to say really that this is most important, because we run very linear, sort of ideas. One thing is as important as another. The philosophy of our Indian ways is very important, because that philosophy could very well fit into today, and I think we wouldn't have the problems we have if we had our original philosophy, as many people. Because everybody would know the same things. See, everybody don't know the same things now, which makes it very hard. No matter how much you know, if that other person you're associating with doesn't know that, you're just going to clash one way or another. Or at times, anyway. So, in order to learn that, to know that philosophy, it's pretty hard to decide which comes first, philosophy or language. I imagine language must have come, and then philosophy must have come second. But you need to know those things, because it teaches you the proper way you should behave, and how you should communicate with other people, and how to live with other people. Today, in this day and age, we have this big house like this. And probably a long house wasn't as long as that, or maybe some of them were as long as this. And many families in one household would get along very well, no problems. Now, try that today, and it's complete chaos. You know, because we don't all know the same way to live with people. Or we haven't lived that way, so we don't know. We can only guess at how people must have got along. But boys and girls were taught exactly the very same things as to the children, up to a certain age. And so everyone knew their language, everyone knew their history, everyone knew respect. Everyone, I guess my mother used to tell me, has told me that one of the most important things is honesty. Because when you have honesty, then other things just fall in line. And how much honesty do we see in the world today? Even the government is so corrupt. Really. You know, well, all we see is corruption all around us. And then they wonder why we, or some of our people, are bad. Well, where did they learn it from? Who brought fire water? Who brought dope? Who brought all the nasty things that we do? But we don't have to do it just because other people do it. It's the only other thing. We adopt so many of one another's ways. We're told to adopt the good ways of another culture and leave the bad alone. In fact, that's what the two wampum was all about, was that we live our life our way, and you live your life your way, and never the two shall cross. And yet, that was broken by non-Native people, the two-road treaty. Indian people have never broken a treaty. It's always the other way around. So I think language, right now I could say language and philosophy, that lifestyle. A lot of people will say, well, who wants to go back to the old Indian way? You don't have to go back to the old Indian way. You don't have to live in a longhouse. You don't have to do without TV or a car or any other thing that you know, These are the things we adopt to our benefit, oh my people. But that philosophy, you can live that philosophy and still have all these things. And people cannot see that.
Well, they see, it seems to me they see that it's a choice between either one or the other, rather than you can choose what you hold on to and choose what you add into your life.
Well, I've never really questioned anybody about why they think that. I just try to, even in some people don't even really see why language is so important, because they say, what is it going to do to the kids? They'll never use it. Why not? It's our language. If enough people spoke it, they could use it. It would be used. Like I want to use Oneida to people I know who talk to me in Oneida, and I answer them and we get into conversation. I've always wanted to teach Oneida, but I think I'm past the stage of teaching Oneida. Maybe not. But I always think to myself that I don't have enough patience to be able to teach. I might teach history or something, but not. Not language. I mean, there was a day when I really wanted to, and I just wasn't being accepted. So. Okay, I'll go somewhere else. I'll try something else. It's always something. There's so much to do. I can't see why anybody should be bored at any time. There's really so much potential here that it's just unbelievable that anybody would be at a loss to do something.
That's right. You seem to have a really clear sense that for yourself, that part of your purpose is to hang on, help. To hang on to your culture. Mm-hmm. When did you begin to have a sense of that? When did you realize that was
when I my father enfranchised before I was even born. And I was born right here on reserve. And he was given 48 hours notice to get off reserve with him and his family. I don't know what the complaint was, but anyway, as an enfranchised person, he shouldn't have lived here. My mother's from here. And his mother is from here, but he's from Delaware. And so I went to school in provincial schools from the time I started school, and it wasn't until I was 15 and realized that coming back to the reserve, and we'd come on the weekends. I met some of the girls from here, and we used to work, and we'd rent bicycles and come up here, for the weekend. And the girls, none of the girls I knew spoke Oneida, and they wondered how I could speak Oneida. But you see, the federal system forbid them to speak their language in school. But in the provincial system, they didn't know there was any such law, see? And that's the school I went to. And I learned my English when I started school when I was 7. But it wasn't a matter of being punished if I didn't speak it, if I spoke it. The teacher, in fact, used my older brother and sister to help me learn. And I've always enjoyed learning along fairly well in school. And then I guess I was 15 then, and then I started, I would come quite often down to reserve until I was 18, 19. Then I suddenly realized that what was going on. I guess I was well into my 20s because I've always worked away from home. I just take time to have kids and then back to work again. And the urgency of getting the language back to the younger generation, that's a whole generation who don't speak the language, see? And it's their children who are learning now. But still, it's unrealistic to imagine that a child can learn that. That's the only time they hear it, 10 minutes a day or even a half an hour at the most. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a waste of time and money, really.
Was it coming back to live on the reserve again that
I don't think so, but it made me realize what was happening here. As an outsider, I could see what was happening here. And I can still see it happening. I can still see it. People really still do not realize that one of these days, all those people who speak the language are going to be gone. It's only those children, well, so even some of those older women who have gone to what we just call Mashhol down here at Muncie, the Institute. And some of them were sent to Sault Ste. Marie, far enough away from home that their families can't bring them home, you know, for years on end. And they still speak their language. They still speak their language. But not many of them taught their children the language, simply because of the punishment they were suffering, you know. I mean, you can tell a child 10 different times in 5 minutes not to do a certain thing, and the minute you're out of sight, they're going to try it. So how are we going to teach children not to talk all night if they're only going to be strapped at school, you know? Why do that? You know, you don't want any extra punishment for your children. You want your children's life to be much better than what you had. And you do anything to give them a better life than what you had. So, now there is one reason why my children don't speak the language. And I think those people who went to Mashhol and got the punishment for speaking the language also didn't teach their children. No, everybody didn't go to Mashhol from here because they had schools around, and outlying schools, like there's four of them, really. And so there were people who didn't have to go and who were taught. And at the beginning, I guess they had native teachers who taught in Oneida at one time. See, we've only been here 150 years, 147 years or something. And it's been quite a thing. Christianity, in order to be Christian, you had to leave your Indian ways behind because they were bad, see. And that's where also the medicines went to. People who knew medicine become Christian, they had to leave all that. On those unholy things, you know.
I went to Spanish, and I know what you're talking about when you say that we don't teach our children our language. But what I tried to do, because I didn't know, what I tried to do was I got my sons and my mother involved, mm-hmm. where she's teaching it at home, even now. Even though they're in high school, she's still teaching them as we yeah. go along. And any words that we don't understand, she tells us.
Yeah.
She puts it down on tape for us to play back. She said, well, this is something that you will want to learn. So she'll put it on tape. And we just sit there, rather than listen to music, we sit there and listen to the talk. And it brings back a lot of the culture, or a lot of the Ojibwe language. Because the Ojibwe language up from Cape is supposed to be the real, true Ojibwe language. Because I've heard a lot of Ojibwe speak, they throw in English words or they throw in extra syllables.
Yeah, broken language.
And it is true. We were beaten. We were beaten to the point where we had to give in as a child from learning our language at all. I can recall a few of the two stories that I can recall on Spanish. One of the girls, we were talking Indian, we were 4 years old, and we had been speaking Indian back and forth, and they had caught us. One of the teachers came up, and they had this pail of hot boiling water, and they threw it at us. And one of the older girls happened to be there, and she happened to be on my side, and she grabbed me. And she threw me across the room, and the other girl got the water.
Oh, God.
And the girl did die. But that wasn't the end of the punishment. The punishment was when I was thrown down 3 to 4 flights of stairs, because I missed that first punishment. I nearly died in school. But because I guess I had such a strong will to live, or someone was there protecting me, I lived through that. I lived through the school. But that happened quite a lot. So I know what you're talking about when you say that it was beaten out of you.
Well, that actually it wasn't beaten out of me because I didn't go to federal school. And these were only in the federal schools. But my children, I would not, I didn't teach them for that reason. I wish many times now I had, but going to work, I wasn't with them. One of the things I think that one of the things that has come out of a change in history when families did not, extended families were broken down to the nuclear family. And you have nobody to associate with, or your children don't have anybody to associate with. And the people who I think are most important are the elder people and the middle or the little people. Those two generations get along very well. Like I know with my own grandchildren, I get along better with them than I did with my own children. I let them get away with what I didn't let my own children get away with. But I think because you don't have your grandmother living in your own house anymore, because the families are broken up into the nuclear families, or when somebody gets married, they go off someplace and buy their own home or whatever they do, live somewhere else anyway, as soon as possible. We don't visit like we used to either, you know? You've got the telephone now, or the car, you jump in the car and go. We just don't visit like we used to. Because and those people in those days, not too many years ago, when there were hardly any cars, there were no cars here, people walked from one end of the reserve to go and visit. Or to have tea. We don't do that no more. Everybody's too busy. There's so many things to do. A man and a woman in order to make ends meet, a man and a woman have to work. They both have to work, and where does that leave the kids? The idea of women going out of the home to work, it's got to be stopped too. Their place really is in the home to bring up these children they've born. And I think that's another way of getting back to the old way. And I think these career women, these liberated women, I think that's a lot of baloney myself. Maybe because I've come from a society where women are on the same level as men. The Ojibwe's, their women are on the same level as men. They treat their women just as good as the Iroquois men treat their women. But again, the trouble there is that many of the people who don't know their own history don't know that.
Tell my husband I walk beside him, I never walk behind him.
You know why men too, when they walk down, Indian couples walk down the street and a man is on the inside, opposite to woman, or the woman walks behind him. There's not a darn thing wrong with that, you know why? Or a man gets out of the bus, he lets the lady get off first, and then Indian, he'll get out first before the woman gets off. He's there, feeling the way. Mm-hmm. And you come after everything's all right. But the white people don't look at us that way. He treats her like a slave. She's got to walk behind him. There's a good reason for it. And it's to protect their women. I think our men have succeeded in defending us women, or
taking care of us.
Protecting their women.